Good morning, this is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I would like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how have you been?
Well, just glad that my son and none of his Kamiakan teammates got hit by lightning down in Walla Walla last week.
It was a little bit...
freshman game down there against College Place High School, and they canceled it at halftime because of lightning.
Wow. You know, I think I saw some of that shooting out of the sky there, and it was...
Oh, he said it was loud.
It was a little bit of a shocker out there for sure. So, yeah, we definitely transitioned to a little more normal weather for this time of year, for sure, but still pretty good. Easy to show houses in. We're super busy, so I will take it for sure. And we have Mr. Tom Coyne with Umpqua Bank, our resident in-house lending expert. Tom, how are you?
Well, speaking of lightning at a stadium.
Oh, boy.
I was in Seattle last weekend.
I feel an overtime story coming.
I was in Seattle last weekend, and sure enough, what did you know, the Hawks pulled out that win, John.
Yes, that was.
I will not let my wife know that you said that. She's a redhead, and you will lose.
Yes, definitely.
Big Bronco fan.
That was pretty exciting.
It was a good game.
Incredible.
Right down to the wire, for sure. Yeah, we were...
They played better than the Packers.
We were supposed to be going to the hockey game, and we kept wanting... Okay, we can leave now. No, we can't leave. No, we're going to be late to the game. We got to see the end. So, I know what you mean, for sure.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, glad to be back here working, and... ready to do some more loans.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we always like to start off with our crazy real estate story, national real estate story. And this one's a success story. So Kelly Ripa has sold, her and husband, Mark Consuelos, have sold their New York penthouse for $20 million. Now, this thing's been on the market for 9 months. So... I think in a hotter market like that, a little bit longer time on the market. But get this, it is a five-bedroom apartment in the Soho District, and it is absolutely huge, 6,700 square feet penthouse. And it has more than 3,000 square feet of rooftop decks. Here's what's crazy about it. They bought this penthouse in 2005 for $9.5
million.
Hmm. And recently just sold under contract for $20
million. That's a nice profit in 8 years.
Doubled their money in 8 years. So you see on TV that market is a hot market. I think that speaks volumes for how hot it can be.
And you see a correlation between the intelligence of these people you talk about. And I'm serious.
Yes.
Generally a pretty smart, savvy gal, been on TV for years.
Absolutely.
And for lack of a better word, we hear about some of the dummies out there, and they usually end up taking a bath.
Our celebrity real estate stories are usually about major haircuts and price drops. And this was not one of them. So very, very intelligent move that they made. You can see why they also own their own production company. So smart real estate moves that can pay off big time. One of the other national stories on a serious note that I did want to talk about a little bit is Reuters is reporting. Commerce Department came out on Wednesday this week and said that new construction sales have gone ahead and hit their highest level in more than 6 years. So those sales jumped 18% to a seasonally adjusted rate of 504,000 new construction units. And that was the highest level since May of 2008. So a lot of new home sales. And that segment accounts for about 10%, 9 to 10% of the housing market across the nation. And that kind of just is kind of bolstering part of the recovery that we're really having, you know, a good continuing real estate recovery, especially on a national level. So nice to see some of those real positive numbers coming out from the U.S. on the national side. That keeps that home building industry going and keeps a lot of people working, and that's kind of really been the basis of some of our financial success pulling out of the recession. So good to see good numbers.
Great news.
Back to kind of a local level. So what we do each week is I'm talking with my agents, we're working with our clients, and we really like to come up with a topic about what's happening now, what's going on in our business, and what do people need to know with what's happening. So one of the big things that I've seen lately with a lot of interaction with clients and other agents and service providers, and that is some real lack of negotiating strategies. And this always comes up. You find the house you like, or you get an offer on a house as a seller, and it really comes down to negotiating contracts. It's one of the top four of the things that we do in our job. And a lot of times people take for granted, how many negotiations have you been in? How many houses have you sold over the last 10 or 15 years? And a lot of times people say to me, Lance, how did you know that's what they're going to do? Well, you really start to get a feel for it when you have a lot of experience in that negotiation. So one of the first things that I did, just to kind of let people know and educate people, is I went through and I looked at our local MLS over the last 12 months. And this number stays pretty consistent year to year. And what I found was that of the houses sold, houses sold within 96.5% of list price. So what that means is over roughly 3,000 sales, when you average it out, most of the houses that are listed are going to sell within 3.5% of their list price. Because the age-old question that you get from buyers is, what should I offer? And so there's a couple different rules to kind of go by that I kind of wanted to go over and say, okay, that is a great question. We don't want to offer too much because you don't want to overpay, and especially if we're representing a buyer. Our job is to get you the best possible deal that we can on that house and meet your needs in what you're doing. And if your number one need is to get that house, then we can talk about some strategies with that. But the golden rule, I always start with the golden rule, and it really holds true here, and that is just do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And what's good, bad, or indifferent, and I think bad, or kind of sadly, you know, in today's, you know, litigious society and negotiations, we see a lot of people enter into negotiations and say it has to be a negative confrontational experience. And what I find is exactly the opposite. A lot of times when you're dealing with reasonable and objective people, you'll be surprised that they're either refreshed by that or encouraged by that, and a lot of times they'll bend over backwards and meet you more than halfway. So we're trying to present your offer in the best possible light that is fair to all parties, and I know that's kind of cliche, the whole win-win strategy, but you got to think, and here's what a lot of people are very short-sighted in their approach, and we deal with this with buyers a lot of times, is they say, you know what, we have to destroy the other side. We have to get this house so low that there's nothing, you know, left for the seller to take with them. Well, a lot of times that can backfire, and the problem is what can happen a lot of times in deals that people don't see if they're only looking at that negotiating strategy, is there might come a time later in that transaction where you're going to need something additional from that seller. And if that's the attitude you've taken and that's the way you've treated the seller, when it comes time that you need something, guess what's going to happen?
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, and you're probably not going to get it. And we've seen it all the time. We've seen people just be brutal in negotiations, you know, very confrontational in a walkthrough with sellers, not handling things through the proper channels. And then what happens, oh, gosh, you know what happens is my moving truck showed up 2 days early, and they really would like to put that stuff in the garage, or we would like to close 2 days early because my moving truck is here and they're charging me $400 a day to sit out there in the semi and stare at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd like to close 2 days early. And I've seen it happen. And sellers in this case go, oh, gosh, you know, it was so pleasant dealing with you throughout the transaction so far. I just want to extend this out for the next 2 days. So I'm sorry. We still have a load of furniture to pick up, and we don't want to close early. And there's like one chair in the living room.
And we're maybe going to camp out in the living room just one more night.
Exactly. And so these are the things that happen that unless people have the experience and know this and have been through this, that you don't know what you don't know. And that's always, you know, kind of a saying that we use is say, gosh, you know, I wish I could take my brain and stick it inside your head so that you could see what I've seen. But my job is to find a way to show that to you and say, I think I can still get you the best possible deal without becoming mortal enemies of the seller, because we're going to have to close this and we're probably going to need something down the line.
Well, not only that, but how many of your buyers have gone into a house they just bought and maybe that seller didn't leave the house as clean as they maybe should have?
Absolutely. And we find that a lot of times. And if it's been a good relationship throughout the transaction, sometimes things like that get overlooked. Or they say, gosh, I know they had to leave in a hurry and the closing was 2 days earlier, so we're just going to take care of that. So instead of kind of having that cooperative attitude, we can have the opposite. So we're always trying to have that win-win positive situation. It does not always happen. And there is times where we really have to put our foot down and really fight it out for our clients. That's what we're hired to do. But we can do it in a way that allows everybody to accomplish their goals. So that was a big point for me. Another point that I wrote down is just that ethics are everything. There's really no explanation needed here, but Tri-Cities is like the biggest, smallest town you've ever been in. And so it doesn't take long for people to figure out the opposite side of that. And so we're always just trying to maintain trust in those relationships, whether that's in real estate or any deal or contract negotiations at Hanford or whatever the case may be with your industry. I think a lot of people know that if you don't have that, you're really going to have nothing in those negotiations. So that's a big one for sure. So a lot of things to talk about with negotiating. I want to, when we come back from the break, we're going to hear a little bit more about the lending side of things, what's happening with the money right now, and I'm going to present the two most often used strategies in negotiating when we come back.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been here talking about some negotiating strategies, some local issues. As always, we want to interview for the job of selling your house or helping you buy a house. If you have any questions about that when you do start to interview, we want to be on that list of candidates. You can go to kenmoreteam.com to get a hold of us. And somebody else that I know wants to interview for the job of giving you the money. And when was the last time you did a job interview about that? I'll just line them up around the block. Mr. Tom Coyne at Umpqua. Tom, how's things going over there?
You know, Lance, things are fantastic. And I think I came up with a pretty good topic here. We haven't talked about this before. And I think it fits with the show about, you know, talking negotiating strategies. And when you're getting ready to go under contract or ready to submit an offer, something that you absolutely have to have is a strong approval letter from a local and reputable lender. So,
well, Tom, you don't absolutely have to have it because I got three offers last week without them. But
how'd that make you and your sellers feel?
Well, we didn't even really take it seriously until we called the agent back and said, hey, is this person pre-approved? Can you send it to me? So our sellers, we stopped cold in the tracks. I mean, we stopped the process until we got the letter. So,
you know, I was going to say nothing throws up a red flag faster than having a letter from a lender you maybe you've never even heard of in Connecticut.
Absolutely.
But I would say not having a letter at all is probably even worse.
Absolutely. So,
Fred's Bank.
So please, please talk about this so that we can let people know how important it is.
Well, these approval letters are important. Very, very important. I mean, knowing that when a client gets an approval letter, they're truly approved is one of the things that I put at the forefront of my business, and I really put my reputation up against that. And nothing could be worse for a seller than they get an approval letter, they accept an offer, they take their house off the market, they go and find another house, they put an offer on it, and then a week before closing, they find out that their buyers actually aren't approved. So I certainly take it very seriously when we issue these approval letters out. And what I thought would be good to talk about is what I consider the three different types or stages of an approval or qualification that a client can get. And, you know, the first one that we hear about occasionally is called a pre-qualification. Now, when I hear this, it doesn't really mean anything to me at all. It just simply means the buyer's called the lender, maybe they chatted about what rates are doing and different financing options, what loan programs are out there. The borrower may mention they worked at Bechtel and they make X amount per year, and they said, oh, I have good credit. But nothing has been verified, no application's been taken, credit hasn't been checked, the lender hasn't received any documents from the clients, nothing's been reviewed. So a pre-qualification really isn't worth anything.
Sounds like those ads on TV.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
unfortunately. So if a lender even would give out something called a pre-qualification letter, I would just run, because they're really not doing you, or they don't necessarily have your best interest in mind if they're willing to give you an approval letter when you're going to put so much at stake based off of that letter when it really has no validity. Now, it very well could be that you're ultra well qualified and no problem at all, but what going to the next stage is going to help you, and that's getting what's called a pre-approval. So it's just a lot more in depth than a pre-qualification. Now, on a pre-approval, I'm going to have a client fill out a full loan application. I'm going to check their credit. I'm going to see how their credit scores are. Do they have any derogatory credit? I'm also going to be reviewing their employment history. They're checking their income, their assets. And once I have those income and assets and liabilities, I'll be able to calculate their debt to income, which is very important, something we use a lot. And that's just how much money they spend monthly on credit debts divided by their gross income. Now, I can certainly argue that lenders both locally and nationally have different standards they follow when issuing these approval letters. Lance, and I'm sure you've dealt with it many times in the past when you're given an approval letter and the transaction later falls apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, another thing too that I wrote down while you were talking is we work with a lot of builders, and how it works with the builders is we sell one of their houses and then the bank releases them more money to build their next house. Well, our banks that we work with our builders, they will not release the money for the next home built to be built until they have a solid pre-approval from somebody like Tom. If they just get a pre-qualification with that offer, they'll say no, no, no. They'll kick it back, and then the builder can't move on. So not only is it a matter of working with the clients, but certain of our sellers, like our builders, we can't accept an offer like that because it does no good to help the builder move on in the project.
Yeah, exactly. You know, probably 75% of the time, I'm going to need to review some sort of documentation from the client before I give out that approval letter. Now, of course, we come across clients who just have perfect credit. They make $100,000 a year. They have absolutely no monthly debt, and they're obviously going to be approved. And in those cases, case-by-case basis, we'll issue an approval letter within, say, an hour of them filling out an application. But most of the time, I'm going to need to see pay stubs, tax returns, and other documentation before we can issue this approval. If you've gotten an approval, if you're out shopping for a house right now, and you've called 1-800-LOAN-ME-MONEY in New York,
right,
and they gave you an approval letter out, and they didn't ask for any of your stuff,
right,
you, again, should probably run, because you know, they don't necessarily have your best interest in mind if they're not covering all the bases that they need to in order to make sure you're going to be approved and you're not going to have any issues.
Well, you know, if they only go off the numbers you give them.
Exactly.
Who's going to verify? You could lie through your eyeballs and tell them you make 150 grand a year, and then the whole thing's just going to go poof.
Well, yeah. A lot of times, you know, a client will put down that they make, say, $5,000 a month, but really I get their pay stubs and their year-to-date really only shows they're making $4,000 a month. Well, then that's what an underwriter's going to want to use to qualify them. So it's really in the client's best interest to make sure they're going through a local lender so they can go in and meet with when they get that approval letter, bring all their documentation in, and make sure they're going to be approved and that nothing comes up down the road that's going to prevent you from getting into that house. Now, what the third and final approval a client goes through is the full underwriting approval. Now, the underwriter is essentially the last set of eyes that a lender has before they disperse the loan to the client. And what they do is they basically redo everything that I already have. They'll make sure the client meets all the guidelines of the program they're applying for. They'll review all the documentation that I gave them and see if there's anything else we need. Now, if a loan ever forecloses, the bank's going to go back to the underwriter and they're going to audit the file. And if there's anything they see that the underwriter missed or should have asked for, then the underwriter's job's on the line. So they are going to leave absolutely no stone unturned when they're reviewing a loan. And keep that in mind if, you know, we have to come back to you and ask for additional documentation. It's because, you know, the underwriter is going to cover all their bases to make sure that you are fully approved. Now, Lance, I think I mentioned this to you before, but one of the things that my team strives for is what we call one and dones. And what that means is we submit a file to an underwriter, and my processor, my assistant, myself, we package it up so clean with everything we know the underwriter is going to need that they review the file and they say this file is ready to close. They come back and ask for no conditions. So
that is fantastic. That's like a touchdown for you.
It's awesome. I
yeah,
love it. One
absolutely.
And done.
Okay.
And then our processors get bonus for it. So it's something we definitely try to do. And what that does is it allows us to be so much more efficient in our turn times. You know, I can't count how many loans we've closed in 2 weeks or less this year, and it's strictly because of how well we put together our files. But like Lance mentioned at the start of this segment, if you're looking for a lender that's going to finance the largest purchase of your lifetime, I definitely want to interview you for that job. I'm hoping and I'm certain, actually, that you'll leave the meeting feeling extremely confident that you've picked one of the very best lenders you can possibly find.
Absolutely, Tom. We appreciate it. It's who I used and who's done work for me in the past, and I really appreciate it. And you're closing lots of deals for us every week, so thank you for that and taking care of the clients. Before I get on to my last topic of the top two negotiating strategies that we see a lot of, I want to sneak some property in here because we've got some amazing new listings. So we just listed a house over at 505 North Fisher Street in Kennewick. This is a three-bedroom, two-bath, and it's a brick rambler with an in-ground pool.
Ooh.
1,835 square feet, big living room with fireplace, large kitchen and dining room, plus a family room, big bedrooms, and large main bathroom. The yard's fully fenced, has a covered patio back there by the pool, brand new vinyl liner in the pool, and a dog kennel area. Oversized detached two-car garage with an attached bonus room and office. Okay, so we're getting all this, RV parking, great location, and that's at $172,900.
What?
We just took over this listing, put a super aggressive price on it. The owner is like, I'm done, I'm out, so let's get rid of it. So this is an amazing value and a great, great house. Number two that we just put on the market, this is out Harrington Road, West Richland area. Gorgeous area, and this is 100906 North Horn Rapids Drive. We've sold a couple other houses we've featured and talked about on the radio show. We've had very popular area in the last couple months, and this is a brand new listing that we put on. Huge, five-bedroom, five-bath home. It's on 2 acres out there, 1.97 to be exact, disclaimer. So almost 2 acres, beautiful wraparound porch, and we're talking 4,136 square feet. Formal living room, family room on the main level, large country kitchen. You've got a, on the main level, you've got a guest bedroom with its own bath. Enormous master suite with sitting area on the upper level, great views. Three bedrooms upstairs also, and then you've got a partially finished basement that has a den and a half bath, and then a big open area that the previous owner used as a shop. You could have a theater room down there. You could really finish it off and just be incredibly, incredibly happy with what you had there. So we've got all this. You can't find this price per square foot out there for $359,000.
Wow.
Okay, so we're coming in super, super low, and it's got the 2 acres, so you could develop that 2 acres into whatever you wanted it to be. Fantastic, fantastic value to get that much house in that neighborhood. Pick number three, I've got 22 West 3rd Avenue in Kennewick. This is a two-bedroom, one-bath Rambler, completely updated, I mean completely gone through. New laminate flooring, kitchen has tile counters, brand new cabinets, all new bathroom with tile flooring in the bathroom. This is that perfect little starter home or investment, new siding, new roof, $94,900. That gets you started and gets you in under $100,000, and for what's out there under $100,000, this one looks really, really good. So, if you want to talk strategies for how to negotiate on a house like this, that's what we're talking about. And two of the strategies that I see most often is there's the start low and come up to your real price. We see this a lot. Say you've got a $300,000 house and the purchaser is willing to pay $290,000. A lot of times we'll see an offer at $280,000. Hoping that the seller will come down and meet them halfway. Very popular strategy, usually without insulting the seller. However, sometimes that's $20,000, nothing to bat an eye at. You know, when a seller's looking at a $280,000 offer, and they think, gosh, that's $20,000 low than where we should be. And Lance told me the house is selling within 3% of the list price. That's only $6,000. They're looking at me and wondering what the heck we should do with this offer, burn it or keep talking. and so one of the things that we're doing is trying to figure out where they're at and where we think they'll land. And so we're working through that. Positives of doing it this way is that it's a lot of times what most people expect you to do. We see this a lot in the market. You also, you won't run the risk of paying too much because of your initial offer price is at a point where they might accept it and move on. The negatives of this approach that people sometimes don't see is that if both parties don't agree to react at the same pace, then it can create bad will or tension. Say the seller reacts in 1 hour, and then it takes the buyer 2 days to get back to them. A lot of times, the other party starts to wonder what's taking so long and why are they not waiting, and then they stew about it, and then they get more irritated about it, and they can think about the $20,000 for longer. So the negative is you might not have the pacing that you want to have. The other thing is you could end up with two strong-willed parties that insist upon having the last word, so the negotiations could break down from that. So that's one thing to really watch out for is the pacing of the responses. If you have a buyer that responds very quickly and as a seller you don't match that pace, it can really create tension that you didn't even realize. And a lot of sellers don't realize that in today's market, and that's a big mistake I see happen a lot.
You ever come down in a situation where you're on a $300,000 house and you guys are like $2,000 apart?
Absolutely.
And they just, how are we going to make this up? Buyer's not moving, seller's not moving. You know, I always tell my clients when they're out shopping for a house, it's about $6 a month for every $1,000.
Yep, absolutely.
So you're going to lose the perfect house over $2,000 on a $300,000 house?
Well, that's the one thing we do is we just sit down and we kind of go over the priorities of all parties. And a lot of times what sellers don't realize in that case is we really take a look at some of the carrying costs. And we'll talk with the seller and say, okay, what if we don't see an offer in the next 2 months? What are taxes going to cost you? What are heat and air going to cost you?
What's your monthly payment?
What's your monthly payment? And so we really go over that. That's one thing that we help people look at, because a lot of times all they're looking at is emotion. Mm-hmm. And if they could do, if they could take emotion out of it, I would be out of a job. I wouldn't be here doing the real estate radio show. Because if everybody could take emotion out of it, literally, I would be done. But that is a big, big part. So when I said it's one of the top four things we do is negotiating, that is part of it because we're able to remove the emotion from it. And it's very difficult to do, but once you've done it a lot of time, it really is a skill. So taking the emotion out of it is a big part of what we do in our counseling and working with folks in the negotiations. So great, great point, Tom. Very, very good point. The other strategy, real quick, before we run out of time, is the take it or leave it best shot offer. And we see this a lot of times where a purchaser can only afford to pay a certain amount. That amount might be a little less than the asking price, and they just know that's all they can afford. They can't do the back and forth, and so they'll just toss in their best price offer. Now, positives is it accelerates the entire process. Makes it pretty quick and easy.
I bet.
The other positive is a lot of people like the simplicity of it. The negatives of it is, number one, you don't know if the buyer's lying or not. That might not be their best shot. However, the danger of it is if a purchaser deviates from that method once they start it, then they lose all credibility with the seller. If they say that's their best offer, but then they come up some, then the seller, that it really
they're holding out
damages credibility with the seller. So that's a negative of it. And the other negative on the purchasing side is they might be overpaying a lot. I mean, if they know they can't come up at all and they don't really want to start lower, they could, in certain instances, come up with and overpay a little bit. So now, a lot of different strategies here. A lot of it comes down to the feel of things. And that feel of things comes from hundreds and thousands of deals and feeling what could potentially happen. And it's strange, but a lot of times I can get that feeling just from the way an offer's written, the way certain things are on paper, how much the earnest money is, did they ask for a home warranty, what is the closing date, who is the lender. It all comes down to a feeling where I can almost grab that contract and smile and say, this is the one. Mm-hmm. Or I can grab that contract and say, why is my stomach saying no and turning up and down? Something's wrong in this paper or this email. So a lot of it's the feel and then using these strategies to negotiate through that process. Like I said before, we want to be the ones that help you with these strategies, put our experience and our time to work for you. KenMoreTeam.com is where you can contact us. Tom, on the lending side, when they need the money, how do they get a hold of you?
Go to my website, TomCoinHomeLoans.com.
All right, sounds great, and we will be right back here next week
on News Talk 870.